from the Gettysburgian and 91.1 WZBT Gettysburg. I'm Jamie Welch, and this is On Target.
I'm Ben Ponce. Today on Target, we'll talk to Executive Director of Alumni Relations, Joe Lynch, who will offer reflections on the life and legacy of Gettysburg College President Emeritus Gordon Holland, who died earlier this week.
Stay with us.
Okay, so it is with a bit of sadness that we announce open today's podcast by announcing that Gordon Holland, the former president and president emeritus of Gettysburg College, passed away on Monday at age 77 due to complications from an ongoing illness, was what the college released. Holland was president of Gettysburg College from 1990 until 2004. And Jamie, you wrote a piece that appeared online and will appear in our next print edition, Gathering the Reflections of the Campus Community. What did you learn as you were gathering those reflections?
As I was gathering the reflections, I talked to a lot of people who were here on campus at the time that Dr. Holland served as president, and it kept coming back, the conversation kept coming back to one thing, and that was his vision. He had what people described as a very clear vision and a very sort of a revolutionary vision for Gettysburg College, and they credited him with moving the college forward in a lot of important ways, including into the 21st century of technology with the laying of fiber optic cables and splitting the computer science from the math departments, supporting the CNAV system, which now we think of as a dinosaur, but back in the day was amazing. No other college had anything like it, actually. And also the acquisition of the Majestic Theater and, you know, getting the gift from F. William Sunderman for the Sunderman Conservatory of Music, among many other accomplishments, which are in the article online and in print this upcoming week. And really, it's on his vision and also his supportive nature. Apparently, he was a very, very supportive person and wanted everyone to be the best person that they could be and for them to succeed in their roles.
Yeah, he certainly sounds like someone who certainly left a positive impact on the campus community. And we'll be talking later with Joe Lynch, the executive director of Alumni Relations, who was a student here in the 80s, which was before Gordon Holland assumed our presidency. Previously, he served at the University of New Hampshire. And he, I think, as we'll learn, views President Holland as someone who helped shape the subsequent presidency of our current president, Janet Morgan Riggs. We'll ask him about that. The other thing I wanted to get into a little bit, Jamie, this week at the College Student Senate meeting, the ongoing funding battles continue. The Disciple Makers Christian Fellowship Group, DCF, which claims to have a fair amount of members, over 100. I don't know what their official roles are, but certainly I think they're among the largest student organizations on campus, requested, I believe it was $180 or so,
yeah,
from Senate to host a dinner for widows of the Gettysburg community, which is an event that they've held for many years. They said that the goal is to foster love and support within the college community. And the funding request was denied. $180, certainly not going to break the bank of a $91,000 budget, was denied on the grounds that it was not an inclusive event. I understand that they were told to go back to the drawing board and potentially work with other student organizations, such as the Muslim Student Association or Hillel, the Jewish student group. I was not at the meeting. We'll be publishing an article in short order, so we'll clear up the facts then. But certainly, it seems a bit puzzling that the Senate budgetary curtailment crusade, no pun intended, that the crusade started with the Christian Fellowship, but that the crusade would begin with a $180 dinner for widows of the Gettysburg community. Any thoughts on that, Jamie?
Well, I have a lot of thoughts on that, but you know, I just think that it's really interesting because I know, you know, these cultural organizations, I don't think that the requirement needs to be, you know, if they're going to say that it's not inclusive because it was an event put on by the Christian group and they should reach out to all the other groups. I think as long as funds are being appropriated equally among the cultural groups and the religious groups, I don't think that it's not inclusive, right? I mean, because if the Hillel group wants to have a Seder, clearly the Christian group's not going to want to come in with that, or the Muslim group is not going to want to come in with that. But I think that that should still be funded by Student Senate because it's an event to serve a community here on campus. And I just don't understand why they're making such a big deal out of this $184 when they then turn around and approve $4,500 to $5,000 for random conferences in Europe for some student group. I think they need to focus less on $184 for, you know, some dinner and focus more on the problems going on with approving all these conferences ad nauseum for all of these organizations. That it seems like every campus club now wants to do these conferences. And I know we talked about this last week, but they're not getting anywhere with this issue.
Yeah, and I don't, and we will give him a chance to respond subsequently. I don't mean to call out Jack Lashendock, but I know that he is a senator, and I understand he was one who raised questions about this particular budget request and whether it should be, you know, co-sponsored or sponsored jointly by other organizations on the campus community. And he is, of course, the president of the International Affairs Association, which recently received more than $4,000 for 17 students to attend a conference in Europe, to your point. So,
and how curious that the senator has appropriations of vast quantities of money made for his organization, but then I suppose the DCF didn't have a senator sitting around to be able to push that through for them. I don't know. Well, clearly it didn't happen. So.
Certainly a fundamentally, I don't want to say, I think it's safe to say that the budgetary allocation process for Student Senate is one that needs to be looked at, and in many cases maybe a broken process.
I would definitely agree with that.
Okay, what else you want to talk about here, Jamie? We still have a few more minutes to fill. It's actually been a fairly quiet news week here at Gettysburg College. Anything that you've been keeping your eye on or want to divulge that we're working on? Of course, we have lots of things up our sleeves. It's just a matter of what we're willing to release to our loyal listeners of the On Target podcast, of which there are actually many. We do have some good data on this, and there are a number of listeners. So to all of those listeners, thank you for your ongoing support of this new venture. We'll be hosting open auditions come spring to replace Jamie because he'll be graduating. So I'm sure people will be tripping over themselves to join me once a week to rant about nonsense occurring within the campus community.
So with that
set up, what do you have, Jamie?
Well, we have the freedom of expression discussions coming up next week. I know that, well, is it just one discussion? I think it's just
I know there's a discussion on October the 31st, which is next Tuesday.
Yeah, at 7 o'clock, right?
I believe that's correct, yeah. So the Freedom of Expression Working Group, I think that's what they're calling themselves. We've been calling it a committee. I think they're calling themselves a working group. Either way, that group of seven, which, as we've mentioned, is led by Jennifer Bloomquist, Associate Provost for Faculty Development and Dean of Social Sciences and Interdisciplinary Programs. Yes, I've memorized that title. Is leading that group. Anyway, that group will be holding an open forum for students to offer input as to the institutional philosophy that they're defining. I know that group has been meeting with campus political organizations as well as other groups this week, and it seems like they are on target in terms of timeline.
No pun intended,
to potentially release a statement towards the end of the semester. Certainly we'll be keeping a close eye on that. The other thing, why don't we go ahead and announce that the Gettysburgian is hosting an event?
Yeah, why don't we do it?
So on November the 30th, we will be joined right here at Gaysburg College in the College Union Building, room 260 at 7:30 p.m. We will be hosting a panel called Holding the Powerful Accountable, Investigative Journalism in the Fake News Era. And this panel will be featuring three esteemed investigative journalists, including Jan Murphy, a Capitol Bureau Chief for the Patriot News, Paula Knudsen, an investigative reporter for The Caucus, which is a publication of the LNP Media Group based in Lancaster, as well as Brad Bumstead is going to be joining us from The Caucus. He's the Bureau Chief there. He's also had an esteemed career of investigative reporting in state government. I was actually just reading The Caucus over in the library. It's a print-only publication, a state government watchdog publication. And the front called the state of Pennsylvania a cesspool of corruption. So well,
that is a bold statement coming from them. So
we'll be getting into it there. I'll be moderating the panel. We'll have time for question and answer at the end. I think it'll be a really good event. And it is open to the college community and, of course, to the Gettysburg community. So a free event on the evening of Thursday, November the 30th at 7:30 p.m. We'll announce that again on future editions of On Target.
So topical. I mean, you know, we have all the fake news out there right now on both sides. And having people that are in the thick of it come and talk to the Gettysburg community about these issues, I think, is really, really adding to the academic dialogue here on campus.
Certainly. And I noted that the day I was reaching out to some of these panelists and finally nailed them down to come, I got a newsletter from the Institute of Politics at the University of Chicago, which is run by David Axelrod, President Obama's former chief strategist. And he does some amazing things out there in terms of bringing in speakers and politicians from across the country, a really fabulous program. And he's hosting a panel on almost exactly the same topic. So we're right in the ball game with David Axelrod at the University of Chicago's Institute of Politics. I think he has some reporters coming in from the Washington Post. So, you know, we're right with the big boys, Jamie.
Absolutely.
So I think that about does it for this news segment.
Well, now I think we have Ben Ponce with our bullet report.
It's been quite a week in Gettysburg College sports action. This week, it's Friday as we record this. Right now, happening literally as we speak, the women's soccer team hosting its senior day. We don't know how it ended because it's still going, but they're doing pretty well, so hopefully they'll win. Earlier this week, the volleyball team dropped another game to Johns Hopkins 3-1. The women's soccer team lost to Johns Hopkins 4-1. Johns Hopkins had our number. Field hockey, they beat us 3-1. The men's soccer team lost to Catholic 3-2. The volleyball team lost to Scranton 3-0. The field hockey team did finally beat Swarthmore. They a win for Gettysburg College Sports 2-0 on October the 21st. The volleyball team lost to Swarthmore 3-2, and the women's soccer team also lost to Swarthmore 2-0. I think that's a new record, but there weren't a whole lot of games this week in Gettysburg College sports action. Thus endeth the bullet report.
I think we're down to under a minute now. I'll tell you, Ben, I don't know how you do it. I know I say it every week, but it gets faster and faster every time. And he does not have a script, folks. He is literally reading off of a sheet of game results, and he is able to read it that quickly.
Efficiency is my middle name, Jamie. I'm having it legally changed from Robert to Efficiency. Benjamin Efficiency Ponce. It'll change my initials from Burp to Bep. I have some pep in my step as I read these results. All right, we'll be right back with Joe Lynch.
Welcome back to On Target. Gettysburg College President Emeritus Gordon Holland died Monday at age 77 due to complications related to a prolonged illness. He served as president of Gettysburg College from 1990 until 2004. And joining us today to talk about President Holland's legacy here at Gettysburg College is the Executive Director of Alumni Relations, Joe Lynch. Thanks so much for joining us, Joe.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So you came to Gettysburg College. You went here and graduated in, I think, 85. Is that right?
That is correct.
And then you came back in February 2000 to work in the alumni office. Is that right?
Yeah. In fact, as part of the interview process in December of 1999, one of the people I interviewed with was Gordon, and I was kind of nervous to meet with the college president, but he immediately put me at ease. He was just a really comfortable guy to be around.
I know that you only worked with him for 4 years, but you did share some great stories with us for our story that we wrote in the Gettysburgian. And you know, you talk about his supportive nature and how he was a very calming force and was really reassuring. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, you know, he was a sailor at heart, and I think having calm seas ahead of him was something he strived for. And he, as a college president, I think his greatest strength, his greatest strengths were that he was really a strategic visionary. He knew where Gettysburg College was in 1990, and he knew where he wanted to get Gettysburg College on an upward trajectory. And he did a lot of things to make that happen. And he did it in a calm way. He had a easygoing demeanor. He was fun to be around and easy to be around, and I think really inspired a lot of confidence in those who worked with him and for him.
One thing I thought you said that I thought was interesting was that you think President Riggs is so well suited for her current role because she worked for Gordon Holland as his executive assistant for 3 years and saw him up close. Could you elaborate a little bit more on that?
Sure. Janet would have been a faculty member for about 10 years at that point. And so she went into this executive assistant position, the president's office, which was a big change for her. But I'm sure he saw her talents and invited her to do it. And when the president invites you to do something, usually you do it.
A little bit more of a directive than an invitation.
And you know, that's all guessing on my part, but I'm guessing that's how it happened. I think he saw some talents in her and thought, and I think it's really smart, and I don't know how common it is among college presidents, but to have a faculty member on your team, I think, can really help bridge the gap, if there is one, between the administration and the faculty. So by doing that, it was a pretty strategic and smart move on his part. And what I think she got out of it, and again, this is my vantage point, coming after the fact, is that she really saw the way he operated, the way he strategically got things done, the way he built partnerships, the way he collaborated with people, and really that calm and cool demeanor and dedication and commitment to getting things done. And she has certainly, I think, lived up to some of his greatest strengths and has advanced him even further.
So one of his last big achievements was this really big capital campaign, The Unfinished Work, which interestingly enough is the title of our strategic plan now. We love Lincoln here. This, I guess, launched about a year after you arrived on campus, right? So I'm just sort of wondering if you can share some reflections of, you know, sort of your work in the development and the alumni parent relations office, and sort of how that, you know, how you worked with Dr. Holland during that time.
Yeah, all presidents, an increasingly important part of their role is fundraising. And I think it was a role he was pretty comfortable in. He was the president at University of New Hampshire before he got to Gettysburg, so he was accustomed to the role. But from the alumni relations standpoint, we would do a lot of events to get the president and others from the college in front of alumni, parents, and friends of the college to encourage financial support. And when he was on the road meeting with people, he was just very natural, again, very easygoing, and I think people enjoyed being around him. And for us to have somebody we could really count on to do an excellent job in that role and be very willing to get out on the road and do it was something that made all of our jobs and development easier. And again, I think that's, Janet saw him doing that, not when she was the executive assistant to him, but as a faculty member, I'm sure she saw him doing that and has taken a cue from that and has has taken the baton and run forward with it as well, because, as you probably know, we're in another campaign now.
Yeah. I know he and both he and President Riggs seem to take a very hands-on approach to fundraising and being sure that they're out there meeting with people, and really trying to raise those funds. Now, do you know how instrumental President Holland was in obtaining the $14 million gift from F. William Sunderman to establish the conservatory? Was he really involved in that, or did that kind of happen, or do you know the backstory on that?
The key players in that were actually two members of the board of trustees who served when Gordon was president, Tom Norris and Jim Weaver, and who were both on the board in the 90s. And they really worked closely with Dr. Sunderman, and certainly with Gordon's knowledge and blessing, to make that gift happen. And Dr. Sunderman, which you may not know, was born in 1898, graduated from Gettysburg in 1919, and lived until 2002. So he is one of the few people who spanned three centuries.
Wow.
And he was a real Renaissance man. He played a Stradivarius violin every day of his life. He had multiple patents in the chemical research field. He worked up until about the age of 101 or 102, editing a chemical journal. He was featured in the New York Times for being an active worker after the age of 100. He put on concerts at the college about twice a semester. And he did a book on photography of his photos, published it. He wrote a book on Madeira wines. So he had.
I don't
he
think was, there's he was anything like that this guy didn't do.
No,
I
mean. No. He helped start the. He was in the first marching band at the college, I think, back in. And some of the very first. There's a picture of him playing an instrument. So he had a lot of interest. He was really the kind of the poster child for the liberal arts education, taking that education and staying interested in a lot of different things over the course of his life. And music was one of his passions, even though it was not his profession. And his dream was to start a conservatory here, and $15 million can help make that happen.
Sure can.
$15 million can do a lot of things, I suppose. I was just going to mention, I currently play in the Gettysburg Marching Band, and there are still some arrangements of tunes that we play that were written by him. And you can see up in the top, it says Sunderman, apostrophe 19, and you always think, wait a minute, is this someone who's here now? Oh, wait, no, that's 100 years ago, 1919.
1919, yeah.
That is really funny. that is a legacy. And I feel it's kind of a cool thing. I was thinking, I think when the class of 2019 arrived at Gettysburg a couple of years ago, I was thinking that after I met some first-year students that I had met people from the class of 1919 up to the class of 2019. So I had a 100-year span of people I had met in this job.
Wow. That's actually really incredible, isn't it, when you think about it?
It is. It really is. It makes me a little old, I guess, too, but that's all right.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to sort of get into a little bit is certainly no current students, most current students would not have had the occasion to meet former President Holland. But you mentioned one aspect of his legacy that people certainly probably will note is that we don't do indoor graduations or convocations or things of that nature. Could you tell that story?
Yeah, he started in March of 1990. His first commencement as president was May of 1990. It was apparently, I wasn't here, but it was apparently raining buckets, so they moved it indoors to Bream Gym. Everybody got four tickets, which means you bring Aunt Edna from Oklahoma and your grandparents and your parents and a brother and sister. You got to pick which four are going to get indoors to actually watch it. So apparently there were a lot of really unhappy people.
I can
so
imagine.
Gordon said, I don't like this. The indoor plan is not very good, so we're going to do everything we can to make it outdoors. And he's actually the person who moved the ceremony when I graduated in 85 was on the south side of Penn Hall, over by the lamppost kind of between mm-hmm. Schmucker, the alumni house, and Penn Hall. And he moved it to the north side and really changed the whole look because back in my day in the early 90s, the stage where you walked across was actually where the lamppost was. So you were kind of looking down and couldn't see real well. And now everything's up on the steps of the north side of Penn Hall at graduation, if you've seen it, which is a really nice environment to have it in. So he brought that. But as the school grew, part of his strategy was to increase the enrollment. We eventually realized no matter how bad the weather got, if it was bad in 1990 going indoors, it was going to be even worse by 2004. So he just said, there's no such thing as bad weather. There's just bad choices in clothing.
I love that quote. That is so great. So he actually contributed a lot to our convocation or to our commencement exercises. Dean Ramsey told us about how he introduced the banners that we see now at convocation and at commencement, and also added the procession through Penn Hall, which we now know is a symbolic tradition that everyone holds near and dear. But it's interesting to think, I guess you didn't participate in that when you graduated, right?
I did not, but I do. I'm pretty sure I've got a diploma to prove I did graduate. But yeah, we did not do some, you know, have some of the traditions that you now have. And Gordon certainly is responsible for those. Another tradition that started under Gordon was the first year walk, which was actually, I mean, it wasn't his idea, but it came under his presidency, and it's something that the last 15 years worth of first year students have taken part in. And again, a neat tie into history to recreate the walk through town that students made in 1863 to hear Abraham Lincoln's words and the dedication of the cemetery.
Yeah, I thought it was a really telling quote that we got from Professor Shirley Ann Warshaw, who said that ultimately he moved Gettysburg from a good college to a great college. And it seemed to sum up a lot of what we heard from across the campus community.
I would definitely agree. And what's so great, I think, is that after he retired, he stayed really involved here. You wrote that, you know, we are now in the middle of this Gettysburg Great capital campaign for our college. It's actually not in the middle. We're at the end. This is the last year of it. And, you know, you said that he actually was even as recently as last year, he attended the event that was held down in Naples. That's really fascinating that, you know, he was so committed that he still was involved in helping to fundraise. Can you talk a little bit about his involvement post-retirement a little bit more?
Sure. Yeah, he actually had a tough 3 years after he retired. So he retired 2004. His wife, Carol, died of breast cancer, which was, you know, you figure you go into retirement, you're going to enjoy time with your spouse. And he lost her 3 years later. And it was really cool that he met a woman who had lost her husband around the same time he lost Carol, and they started a relationship, and he got remarried later in life. But he continued to come to Gettysburg for sometimes homecoming weekend. He also came, he had a winter house in Florida. So he would come to Gettysburg events when we'd be there in Florida. In fact, hosted one in 2015 where 40 to 50 alumni and parents in Southwest Florida came to his house. He hosted, picked up the tab. And the really cool thing was that Janet was there as the featured guest. So he hosted an event where Janet, who had been his assistant, was the president. And another attendee at that event was the interim president from 1989 to 1990, so to see the three of them there at the same time was pretty cool. And he was also involved in a couple nonprofits in Gettysburg. I think it may have been the Lincoln Fellowship, so had an interest in history in the area of Gettysburg. So he was maintained friendships with people here, and it was always a great pleasure to see him. He always had a smile. He always looked kind of tan in retirement, too, which was nice. I think he was having a good time.
Getting out on that boat a lot and sailing, huh?
You got it. Yeah, in fact, he lived in southeastern Virginia, right on a river.
Oh, wow.
And got out in the water often. And he spent his summers in Maine and his winters in Florida. So he had a nice gig going.
So do you have any, like, closing thoughts or closing reflections, you know, as we are all still reacting to the loss of former President Holland this week?
I think it's just a nice opportunity to reflect on the legacy that he had at Gettysburg. And that is exactly what you said, taking Gettysburg from a good regional school to a nationally respected liberal arts college. And it grew in a lot of positive ways under his leadership. He also did a lot from the technology standpoint. I mean, imagine the changes that were happening in technology from 1990 to 2004, and to oversee that as a college president and have a handle of what's changing, how you can harness that to benefit students. And he really did a fabulous job in that area. I know Rod Tostin, who's VP of IT here, and a classmate of mine, actually, commented on that, and I completely agree. And I think he also embodied that friendly, welcoming Gettysburg spirit that has pervaded the campus, I think for 185 years. And as president, he embodied that, and that legacy continues.
A legacy indeed. Joe Lynch, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. And great work on the Gettysburgian and on ZBT, two groups I took part in before I am where I am now. So
it's great to be the alumni director and alumni of the Gettysburgian and of WZBT, all coming full circle here today on the podcast.
It's good to be back.
That's On Target for this week. We'd like to thank the Executive Director of Alumni Relations, Joe Lynch, for being our featured guest today.
We'd also like to thank the staff of the Gettysburgian and the Executive Board of WZBT for their support of this project. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever else you get your podcasts, as long as it's iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, or Google Play.
On Target is a joint production of the Gettysburgian and WZBT. Our theme music was composed by Diego Rocha of the Class of 2019, who is a music major focusing on composition from the Sunderman Conservatory of Music.